Blog Talk Radio.
April the 27th, 2021. And this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And our call-in number is 347-857-3293. And tonight, we are saying, we quote, by any means necessary. We do by any means accept what's necessary. There has been a lot going on, and we've got a lot of reports. We need you to turn on your recording machines tonight. You must record these messages or take down the notes, because when it's over, we've all got to get busy. We've got to get busy. Without further ado, Brother Ralph, what's happening in the news analysis dealing with oppression, which requires the anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, which is another way of calling it the American capitalist system? What's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. So much is happening. It's difficult to think of cramming it into an hour or an hour and a half. Let me once again state, we quote, by any means necessary, and we do by any means accept what's necessary. Now, what I mean is what we comes out of our mouth doesn't match what actions come out of our organizations, ourselves. And I'm going to digress for a moment to talk about what a terrible condition we are in America. For I have spent much time on this program speaking about the terrorism against people of color in America. We have been terrorized, but we must understand that white America also has been terrorized. They are terrorized because they have traded security and whiteness for liberty. And we know, and it's been told by many philosophers, when you do that, you shall have neither and you deserve neither. Once again, they have traded the security of whiteness for liberty. Well, why would I say something like that? Well, today we have Mr. Snowden somewhere in the world hiding from Americans because he would be killed for speaking the truth about what the American governments have done. And what did he say many years ago? Every conversation you have is recorded by America and they decipher it a little later. Now, I won't go into that. That takes too much time. Look it up. You will see they are building facilities. The facilities are so big and taking so much air condition, they don't have enough electricity to keep the air condition to go for the computers to keep all the conversations together. They record everything we say. Julian Assange in prison, what did he do? He told truth. Whistleblowers prosecuted, and there are people on this program are going to be offended when I say Mr. Obama is the worst president in history for prosecuting of whistleblowers. He prosecuted more in his time than all presidents together. He's a part of the terrorist organization that allows white folk to trade their so-called security of whiteness for freedom. Mr. Obama, look it up. What does that mean for the rest of us? Well, we folks of color along, and I'm not upset, because we folks of color have traded the security of maybe We will be allowed to participate. Maybe we will be allowed to participate in this economic imperialism if we sacrifice the truth. We send our young people to foreign wars, and we say, if they come home at all, if they come home unharmed, if they follow all of the rules and regulations, they just may be able to participate in this economic death of the rest of the world, American capitalism. And so we are, and we cannot forget, you can't even say if they pay attention on these streets. It doesn't matter if you pay attention on these streets. You, as I say, we play Russian roulette every time we allow our children to go out of the door because they could be shot in the back of the head. They could be shot for any reason or no reason at all. We trade that for maybe. That's where we are. And Momia's confinement continues, because we refuse to do. All the Democratic Party has to do is put a black face up there and understand this. The Democrats, and I'm going to say it like it is, they select the most culpable, most gullible, the weakest of black people spend the money to get them elected, and then we select them. We elect them. That's the way it goes. Now, what we must do is understand that we have never participated since Reconstruction in the running of government. We had Dave Dinkins, the first mayor of New York, who didn't have the foggiest idea of how to be mayor. He had no power in any position he ever had. And we have to understand that is the game. We have to, as Queen Mother Moore would say, learn to gain power. Learn to exercise power. Learn when you're in a position and you have no power, it is an education for you. And I could go on because I was thinking of a meeting we attended several years ago, and a gentleman from the UN said, you know, there are people saying that 70 to 80% of the people on the planet are useless. And Betty took exception to that. And he came over to talk to Betty, and he said it again. He said, don't you understand? You're talking about freedom. And the reality is there's a movement to remove 70 to 90% of the people in the world. Too many people. And we said, how outrageous. Well, look at the figures on India, my brothers and sisters. Look at what's happening with this coronavirus mutating. Look at America making promises with tens of thousands of vaccines available. And they say, we're going to consider that. What does that mean? What does that mean for the mutating of the coronavirus? What does that mean for those of us who are fortunate or misfortunate enough to have had the vaccine? May not be any good. And as somebody said earlier, and everybody says, oh no, you're going to have to keep getting vaccines over and over again. Well, my brothers and sisters, here we are again. Now, what must we do? What is it that I say that we do everything except what's necessary? What must we do? We must understand that there are political prisoners. We must understand why they went to the death camps, why they are treated differently. As Sekou Odinga said at his trial, how do we know there are political prisoners? Sekou Odinga, what he did 34 years in, he said, because they do not treat criminals the way they treat us. And here's an example. Just 2 weeks ago, a young black man who had gotten out of jail after 10 years for killing his mother was kicking an Asian woman around on the Upper East Side. Nobody came to her rescue. And so if you kill your mother, 10 years is enough. If you fight for your people who have been abused, Leonard Peltier, the American Indian Movement, 50-plus years. If anyone fights for the people, the government hates them. We must demand, and I know people say, we got to vote. We don't know what to do with the vote. No one who doesn't support those who understood and sacrificed their lives for the freedoms and justice that we claim that we are interested in. If you don't support them, what are you doing? This is what this program is about. We have to support poor Chip Fitzgerald. That letter that he wrote, it rings in my heart. I want to hold my grandchildren. That's not like the devil that kicked an Asian woman in on the street who murdered his mother. No, this was someone who had heart, who felt for his people, who had reached the state of human, because the rest of us are just beings. But I could go on, and I thank you for taking the moment to listen. But it's time for Professor Louis to educate and entertain us with the words that, as Lynn said, nothing else can say it as you can in poetry. Professor Louis, your mic is open. Help us out here. We're in trouble.
You hear me?
Your mic is open.
All right. Doctor, I'm getting kind of ill. Hold on now. Did you pay your bill? I'm dying, doctor. Help me if you can. Dying's not covered in your insurance plan. Mama's little baby, sick. She called for the doctor, quick. He came with the powder and the pills. You know he wasn't slow with the bills. So Mama had a hustle and a work to pay the MD. He was a jerk. Working overtime, hour after hour, Mama started losing all her power. She fell down in a sick bed, moans in her bones and a head. The doctor never came day to day after day, 'cause Mama and the baby couldn't pay. Soon the whole family was just about through. It could happen to me and you and you and you. Doctor, I'm getting kind of ill. Hold on now. Did you pay your bill? I'm dying, doctor. Help me if you can. Dying's not covered in your insurance plan. So now is the time for the good fight. Health is not a privilege. It is our right. Insurance companies making money off your mama, papa, and your honey. Big drug companies, richer than rich. They sell you a pill if you got a little itch. The hospital business, bigger and bigger. They take what you make. There's nothing that they give you. So now is the hour and now is the time. You need it for yours. I need it for mine. Free health care for every single one, young and old, under the sun, from the great grandma to the baby's potty. It's got to be the same thing for everybody. Doctor, I'm getting kind of ill. Hold on now. Did you pay your bill? I'm dying, doctor. Help me if you can. Dying's not covered in your insurance plan. If you're sick in England, you're sick in France, no one checks the money in the pockets of your pants. If you're sick in Japan or China, too, not a single body's making money off of you. Right up in Canada, plain to see, everybody's going to the doctor for free. The only rich country where you got to pay is right here in the USA. And it's kind of funny but sad to tell. Nobody makes money off of keeping us well. Nutrition, exercise, health education. Give the people the real information, clean air, clean food, clean water. Make the government do what it ought to. When all of us together are paying the bill, nobody will profit by us being ill. The whole medical system, quick and slick, it only makes money by us being sick. So we got to talk to everybody we meet, people at home, people on the street. Do what you need to, do what you can. We need a single-payer national health care plan. Love up the children. Hug them up and kiss them. They need a single-payer national health care system. Old people getting older everywhere. They need single-payer national health care. Do what you need to. Do what you can. We need a single-payer national health care plan. Doctor, I'm getting kind of ill. Hold on now. Did you pay your bill? I'm dying, doctor. Help me if you can. Dying's not covered in your insurance plan.
I said, save us, Professor Louis. Professor Louis has done it again. Education and entertainment in the same voice. And understand what he's talking about, the health plan. You think you've been ripped off enough? We have an insurance plan. Do you have Medicare? Do you have Medicaid? Look at your TV. There's another insurance plan on that. And then when you have that plan, somebody comes on and says, change, we'll give you another plan. And each time you get more insurance, there's a middleman to take money out of your insurance plan while they promise you the world. And so I guess they will steal with insurance on insurance on insurance and on middleman after middleman after middleman until we understand what Professor Louis is talking about. We need a national health plan. Thank you, my brothers and sisters. Sister Betty.
All right, we've got to move right along, and I want to say to everyone who's speaking tonight, try to keep your hems and haws and your pauses short. We want to get every message in. There's a lot to report. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we've got to address it. And so without further ado, we're going to get an update on the status of Mamiya. But what you should understand, they don't have health care in the death camps, but we're in a minimum security death camp because we don't have health insurance either. Sister Ann, your mic is open. New York City, Jericho, in the house.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always an honor and a privilege to be with both of you. Mumia is recovering from his open-heart surgery. He has been able to talk with his wife, Wadia, a couple of times. He is shackled, but he is allowed to get up and walk around. I found out from some attorneys that actually the shackling of prisoners in Pennsylvania, it's not just a DOC policy, it's actually the law. So, you know, even if you're on your deathbed, they will shackle you to the bed. So that is the story with that. We will continue to pray for Mumia's recovery. The weekend events were tremendous. We had a Zoom event on Friday evening. Culture, fantastic. We had a Mandela Zoom event also on Friday evening. That was great. Went down to Philly on Saturday morning with the Mumia Coalition, two buses and a van. That sounds like a lot, but each bus had to only be half full because of COVID. We had about 500 people in Philly for a great rally that, you know, we had two rallies. We had an opening rally that went on for about 2 hours with a lot of great speakers like Fred Hampton Jr., Pam Africa, Jihad Abdul Mumit, et cetera, et cetera. And then we marched over to the art museum, I believe, and there's a nice big stairs there in a big area, you know, that you can set up another stage, which they did, and then they had a, you know, closing rally. So it was really good, a long day, but very nice. A lot of young people out there, great to see, taking up our banner, you know, and continuing the work. And then on Sunday, we had the day of service for Maroon, as well as the march to and rally at Malcolm X Park in Philadelphia, which was also quite amazing. People started at 8 o'clock in the morning cleaning up this community garden, which is across the street from Russell Maroon Schultz's childhood home. And the garden has a beautiful mural of his mother on the walls dedicated to his mother, who was a teacher. And so his family had us cleaning up the garden, and we did that until about 1 o'clock, and then we marched along with an actual marching band. It was fantastic. And the family of Walter Wallace, who was assassinated by the police 6 months ago yesterday. And we marched together over to Malcolm X Park, where we had another rally with a bunch of very, very good speakers. And I was really amazed at all these community organizations in solidarity with the Wallace family. They were giving away free books for children. They were giving away groceries. They were giving away clothes. It was really, really beautiful. You know, very, very uplifting, you know, despite the sadness of this poor young man being killed. His young wife spoke. She couldn't really speak for too long. She broke down in tears. And Teresa Schultz was telling me that right before they killed this young man, his mother was standing in between him and the police begging them not to shoot him. And the police officer asked her to move, and as soon as she moved, they shot him. It was in the way. So, you know, this kind of stuff is really horrible, goes on all the time. But I am happy to announce, in a way, I just read an article that came out in today's Guardian, and it talks about an international inquiry that was started by, among other people, the National Conference of Black Lawyers. And they have decided in, I think, 188-page report, I just sent it out on the e-list, human rights experts call on International Criminal Court prosecutor to open an immediate investigation into the police killings of black Americans, which amount to crimes against humanity. All right, so this is real serious stuff. It's really amazing. I haven't read the whole report yet, of course, having just gotten it today. I will post some links up on our websites as well so people can read it. Really fantastic to have that. Now, of course, you know, the United States does not respect the International Criminal Court at The Hague, as we well know, they don't respect international law. They don't respect their own laws. But it certainly does not make them look good in the eyes of the world. And they had a whole bunch of relatives who testified, Nicole Bell, the wife of Sean Bell. Imagine living in a world where you must explain to your children that their father, an unarmed bridegroom on the morning of his wedding, can be justifiably killed in a hail of 50 police bullets. That's just one small quote from that. And then we had some other devastating news. The Move family just found out on Friday that the some Ivy League universities have the bones from a victim or victims of the 1985 Move bombing. And they've been using them in forensic anthropology classes, which they've been doing online with more than 5,000 students. And they never asked permission of the living parents. So the Move family, of course, has been quite devastated by this news. They were featured in a video for an online course, Real Bones, Adventures in Forensic Anthropology, offered by Princeton University. So there were two articles about that, which I did send out on our e-list last night, one from The Guardian, one from The Times. Really horrible news. These are the bones of a young teenage girl. So Mike Africa, who was 6 at the time this happened, of course, knew them. They were like his big sisters. It could either be Tree Africa, who was called Tree Africa. She loved to climb trees. Or Delicia Africa. So these are two separate young women. The bones could be of either one of them. So there is a, the Move family had a press conference yesterday. I will be putting up that link as well. People should definitely watch it. It's very hard to watch. It's extremely heart-wrenching. But it's very important. And there's also a petition for people to sign. And I know they're having a rally tomorrow outside of the museum where these bones are. And they are demanding that they be returned to them. Because really devastating. Really devastating. I mean, here you're thinking all these years that you, at least your loved ones have been buried or what's left of them. And then you find out that some Ivy League university is using the bones of your child in a forensic anthropology course without your knowledge or permission. So, you know, this is really some horrendous stuff that's going on here. And
Yes. We've got to move on, so we need you to give us some updates on upcoming events before we go.
Upcoming, we have this coming Sunday, we will be doing a Caravan of Love. We will be doing a Caravan of Love in Pennsylvania for our lovely elder, Russell Maroon Schultz, and it's called Spring the Elders, Caravan of Love to Free Russell Maroon Schultz on Sunday, May 2nd at 1 p.m. And we will be meeting at Rudy County Park in York, PA. And the Caravan of Love will depart at 2 p.m. to a location unknown. This is up on jerichony.org. We're asking people to register ahead of time so we can arrange if people need rides and so on and so forth. Please wear white, bring signs, car banners, instruments, and flowers. And there's also links for more information. Of course, before that, we have May Day. And I know the People's United Front is going to be in Harlem at the Adam Clayton Powell statue at 3 p.m. I know that the International Action Center and others are starting out at Baxter and Canal and ending up at Union Square. And I'm sure there are other ones that I don't know about for May Day. But that should be a very full and active day with a lot of people in the streets. And I'm looking forward to both days myself.
Thank you so much for that, Ann. We must participate, but we must do the basics. We can march and sing and dance. But if we don't demand from those who we support, politicians, if we don't demand something for our vote, we're whistling Dixie.
Absolutely.
Thank you, my brother.
I agree.
Thank you.
And I want to emphasize that Sister Ann's website is an amazing, amazing fountain of information. Also, get on there, and when you got a little loose change, donate on the PayPal link. Without further ado, we've got one of our participants who's made an amazing contribution, Comrade Dennis Knowles. who was born in Detroit and raised in Chicago, and an advocate since he was practically 5 years old. And he has an update and a report for us this evening, and everyone needs to pay attention. Brother Dennis, is there any other comrades on the call? You want to give me their last? I'll open their mics as well. Is that what, would you like that?
Well, if they are on, I'm sure that the New Black Panther Party chairperson of Ohio, Mamada Valencia Shabazz, should be online.
447? I think it's 4467.
It's a 614, yes.
Open.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Go ahead, Dennis. The mics are yours.
Yes, yes. We have really teamed up, and I believe that, honestly speaking, that we as a people know that demonstrations, we know that no matter what we do, we're getting killed by the droves. I would also like tonight to thank Brother Mamiya for his sacrifice. I would like to trade my life for the rest of his years if I possibly could. He deserves freedom.
Thank you.
I'm going to give a report of, you know, as we all know, there have been a lot of shootings since the Derek Chauvin trial. But I'm going to get into some statistics of 2020. Mapping police violence collected data on over 1,100 killings by police in 2020. Compiling information from media. Sir?
Army of Occupation. Okay. They do not do police work. When they captured the young man who killed 10 people plus a policeman, they captured him. When the young man killed Asians, captured him. That's police work. They're doing terror, Army of Occupation. We must bear that in our minds and our language. They shoot us in the back of the head. They shoot us running. They shoot women. That's terror. Army of Occupation.
I stand corrected. You're right. As we even sit here now, about 10 minutes ago, the police knocked on my door asking me if I heard any disturbance. I don't know if that was a check on me or if there was a check on my neighbors, but there were two armed terrorists at my door.
There you go.
Yes, at my door. I want to mention, if I may. And I'll make it as brief as possible, but it's a very defined statistic. 1,100 killings by police in 2020, compiling information from media reports, obituaries, public records, and databases like Fatal Encounters and the Washington Post. This report represents the most comprehensive accounting of deadly police violence in 2020. Our analysis suggests the majority of killings by police in 2020 could have been prevented, and that specific policies and practices might prevent police killings in the future. Very doubtful, but we know that's what they said. 1,127 people were killed by police in 2020. 96% were killed by police shootings, tasers, physical force, and police vehicles, accounted for most other deaths. Officers were charged with crime in only 16 of these cases, 1% of all killings by police. 8 of these 16 cases had video evidence. Most of these videos were captured by police body and dash cam. We were able, the study, to identify officers in 444 cases. At least 14 had shot or killed someone before. 5 had multiple prior shootings. Most killings began with police responding to suspected nonviolent offenses or cases where no crime was reported. 121 people were killed after police stopped them for a traffic violation. Some cities and states have begun to restrict or remove the police from traffic enforcement. In July 2020, the city of Berkeley passed legislation moving traffic enforcement duties from the police department to new agency of unarmed civilian servants. Other cities like Cambridge, Massachusetts, are considering similar measures. And in November 2020, Virginia lawmakers passed House Bill 5058, but it did not stop what happened in Virginia most recently, which prohibits police from stopping cars for equipment violations like a broken headlight or taillight. 97 people were killed after police responded to reports of someone behaving erratically or behaving or having a mental crisis, like David Pruitt in New York, or Daniel Pruitt. In Eugene, Oregon, mental health providers respond to these calls instead of police. In Los Angeles County, co-responder teams of mental health providers and police jointly respond to the most extreme mental health-related calls. An analysis by Los Angeles Sheriff's Department estimated this program prevented as many as 751 use of force incidents and 9 killings by police in 2018. 80 people killed by police were unarmed. Most unarmed people killed by police were people of color. As we well know, that's you and me, Hispanics, Native Americans. Out of that statistic, if you're going to say black, 27, Hispanic, 15, Native American, 1, Asian Pacific Islanders, 2, white, 31, and 4 unknown of origin. Black people were more likely to be killed by police, more likely to be unarmed, and less likely to be threatening someone when they were killed. 65 people killed by police had a vehicle as a weapon, so they said. 55 of these people were killed when police shot at moving vehicles, such as we just witnessed with Andrew Brown Jr., who was executed, just as the sister just mentioned, of Brother Wallace, who was executed in New York, I believe in New York, a practice many experts say should be banned. Experts, law enforcement groups, and the United States Department of Justice recommend that police be banned from shooting at people and moving vehicles. Has not stopped, and this is 2020. These shootings are particularly ineffective and dangerous, since shooting the driver can make the vehicle an uncontrollable threat to both officers and the public. Despite this, most police departments continue to allow officers to shoot people. 180 people killed by police were allegedly armed with a knife.
Hello?
In many countries, police routinely disarm people who have knives without shooting them. That's many other countries. For example, police in the United Kingdom encounter knife attacks at a similar rate as the United States police, but handled these situations without using firearms in all but 3 cases in 2020. Consistent with the international law, police in the United Kingdom are prohibited from using firearms except where strictly necessary after considering nonviolent and less lethal options. Laws in most United States do not require police to exhaust all available alternatives prior to using deadly force. They tend to use it right then and right there. Half of those killed by the police were reportedly armed with a gun. Reported, not necessarily true. 1 in 6 people with a gun were not threatening anyone when they were killed. They might have been de-escalated instead. Same thing with the Micaiah Bryant case. There could have been a de-escalation in her death. That young child, that beautiful child with a beautiful spirit who had autism, could have been saved. 58% of the killings by police in 2020, 629 deaths, were traffic stops. And that's mainly what we're up against, traffic stops. Police responses to mental health crisis or situations where the person was not reportedly threatening anyone with a gun. Creating alternatives. Responses to these situations could substantially reduce this violence nationwide, which would mean substantially fewer people killed by police in almost every city. That is a report on a nationwide statistical report done by whom I'm not quite sure, but it was a very profound report in my opinion.
Well, thank you so much for that. And our report must say that it is an intended killing, amount of killings. That terrorized. We are never sure that we are safe, even in our homes. That's what terror means. Sister Betty.
Comrade Dennis, thank you so much, and keep it coming. We've got a long list of
announcements. Yes, Sister, Sister Shabazz is on the line. Are you there, Sister Shabazz?
I'll try and open her mic if you'll give me a moment. Is that...
Yes. Yes, the 6 months.
Okay, just give me a second.
Okay. You already opened it.
8169, I think it was her.
8169, you are open. Hello?
If not, I'll give
black
up.
Black power, black power.
Okay.
Black power.
Yeah, you speak this, this is Queen Mother Kashiba.
Yes, she's out of the North Carolina, I mean Virginia area, Queen Mother Kashiba.
Okay, so we...
Mama Don, yeah, we got...
We just opened up
people.
The mic.
Yeah. All your microphones are open. Please speak.
4467, your mic is open.
Columbus, Ohio.
Please speak.
Hello, how y'all doing? This is Columbus, Ohio, State Chairman of New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I am also a survivor victim at the age of 13. In the age of 16, in the age of 17, I got hog tied. I got maced through the paddy wagon, hog tied. Couldn't breathe. I am a survivor. I've been doing plenty of work in the community before I even joined the Black Panther Party. I take in runaway teams. I take in streetwalkers, addicts, get them help, take them to the rehab, get them help. I've been doing all that work. I've been involved with the Black Panther Party for like 15 and a half years. I've been doing great work in the community. I feed my children. I form my people fully. My work is not done in vain. I found about Micaiah. Took a lot out of me. Couldn't sleep, headache, cry. And I do have 5 daughters. I do take care of my mother out of 6. My mom is 83. She's bedridden. As well, I take care of my grandbabies, which also been abused by her parents. My daughter, she got 6. They all being abused. We're going to get them in my custody. So they won't wind up being like other children being abused and not listened to.
That's the work that has to be done on a daily basis in our communities. Thank you for your work. The other microphone, Sister Betty.
Yes, the other microphone is open.
Okay.
We're going to go to Dr. Kelly, a professor from Seton Hall, and we will come back if we missed anyone. We've extended the time. Dr. Kelly, we have a long list of speakers. We don't want to let anyone not speak. Your mic is open.
Oh.
And
okay.
Brother Tom, we see you and all the rest of you. Go ahead, Dr. Kelly.
I won't talk long. I won't speak long. I just want to give a shout-out to all those people who are doing the work supporting me and fighting for me, Abu-Jamal and Russell Maroon Schultz. I think it's always important to remember the people on the ground. Whenever we look at our history, movements are made by masses of people on the ground doing work, some people, many of whose names we'll never know. So we always have to do our work to remember them. And also, there's been a lot of talk about reparations, and also we cannot have any reparations if we don't free them all and free all the political prisoners. So we have to remember that. That's just what I wanted to say, and thank you for your work. I miss you.
Right on.
I just wanted to come back on. Yep.
That is the work that we must do. Free those who free us, our political prisoners. We have forgotten that. We must remember with action. Sister Betty.
Thank you so much for that encouragement. And anytime you have an update or discussion you want to add to regarding Mamiya Abu-Jamal, please feel free to do so. Or any other political prisoner. We want to go on. Mother Kashiba, your mic is open. I think it's 8169. 8169.
Yes, yes, Black Power family. I just want to say that with all of this stuff that's going on out here, we are warriors. We are warriors. We were born warriors because our ancestors from one generation to the next always been warriors. They always fight, they fight. So we got to recognize that we are warriors and we can fight our fight. We can fight that enemy. Because our ancestors always conquered that enemy. We had very powerful ancestors that conquered that enemy. So we are warriors, and we can fight that enemy. We can take them down. We can do pressure points. We can do karate, anything. Because our ancestors installed that all in us. So we are fighters. We are warriors.
Well, thank you so much for that. And we must have a strict strategy, and our strategy is to free those warriors who have done it for years and are suffering in the death camps. Thank you so much for your efforts. Continue the work. On the move, Sister Betty.
We're going to Brother Tom. We recognize that Sister Belinda from New Orleans is in the house, and we've got to have an update from them. And we see Sister Gwen has returned. We've got to hear from her. And Brother Joel, wonderful turnout tonight. Brother Tom, Syracuse, your mic is open.
Okay, thanks.
And we see we have a guest, Mr. Reynolds. He'll come after Tom. Go ahead, Tom.
I want to read you a letter sent to Shutdown Indian Point asking us to support a letter calling for a 10% reduction in the $753 billion military budget. Shutdown Indian Point, SDIPN, has been asked to sign a letter to Congress calling for a 10% reduction in the bloated military budget of $753 billion, including nuclear weapons proposed by the Biden administration. A bill was introduced in Congress and defeated because both the Democrat and Republican parties support imperialism. It risks the 10% reduction. It is the largest military budget since the Vietnam War. The United States spent more on the military than the next largest military budget of China, Russia, the UK, France, Saudi Arabia, and India combined. Biden's projected withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan merely reflects a total failure of U.S. intervention that has made the situation there worse than before. Biden's history is one of extending U.S. influence overseas by imperialist cause. He is closely connected to the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex. His review of the hundreds of bases overseas is laughable. He is also considering even more bases. And our government is telling the American people that China and Russia are threats to the U.S. Yet it is the U.S. that has bases surrounding both Russia and China. Do China and Russia have bases surrounding us? Whatever happened to the anti-war movement? We must organize massive anti-war demonstrations at the nation's capital and throughout the United States. I am really perplexed by so many anti-war and peace groups have endorsed this letter, such as Veterans for Peace, Peace Action, Four Resistors League, a few Green Party locals, and even some in the IPN itself. We're asked, those of us long that's on Indian Point now, we're asked to vote if we should sign or not sign this letter, and I vote no. We should not sign this letter. We must organize mass anti-war demonstrations throughout the country. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. We must refuse to vote for any politician who doesn't support the anti-war movement. But we have to understand we are terrorized economically. We are terrorized for the mortgage. We are terrorized looking for the rent. We are terrorized looking for health care. But we have to overcome that terror if we do want to have freedom, that elusive word that people are struggling for. Sister Betty.
We want to extend an invitation to a new speaker this evening, Mr. Reynolds, John Reynolds. Your mic is open. He's a representative of the Green Party and the Green New Deal. It is important that we recognize our allies wherever they come from. This is a giant we have to fight, and we need all hands on deck. Brother Reynolds, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty. I must demur that I am not presently a representative of the Green Party or the Green New Deal or anything of that sort. I am, as I have been, a revolutionary Marxist, and my call is for a mass party of the working class, as I think I have said on many occasions in the past, that, you know, if we want freedom, we have to throw off these chains by which we are all bound, black and white, all nationalities, all so-called races. Most of us are workers and not owners of the means of production. And we will be enslaved as wage slaves, as we are, until we break these chains. And that can only be done through mass movement. So I am a representative of the Shutdown Indian Point now, and we are both marking the observing the event on April 30th of the final shutdown of the last nuclear reactor at Indian Point, and also rededicating ourselves to the struggle for a livable world with clean, sustainable energy and equity, and because these technologies that we have developed need to benefit all of us, and rather than some people getting all the benefits and the frontline communities, which are usually communities of color, bearing all the brunt of the waste and the pollution and the main risks that are involved with these technologies. So we're marking the observance of the closure, but we're a long struggle ahead of us to decommission this plant safely, and we are still at risk from this plant until it is totally cleaned up and restored to, you know, the land is restored to condition that is that is sustainable. We also need to focus on the fact that over 1,000 workers at this Indian Point facility, most of them will now be without a job, and we're demanding a just transition for the workers so that they can be employed, retrained, and employed at union-scale wages, and those who are eligible for retirement, of course, should retire with full pensions. So we'll have this event of 7:30 to 9 on April 30th, and I urge everybody to look for the flyer and the email that's going out on that. I also, on a side note, this is not SDIPN, but I will be present on May Day, as I usually am, and I salute all those who are organizing events for mating. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. And as we fight for a just world, we must make sure there is a world left to fight for. We have to have clean energy, clean air, there must be a clean New Deal, Green New Deal. Thank you again, Sister Betty.
Well, I have apologize for misunderstanding the comrades' affiliation, but as I said before, I stand on that. I would unite with the devil if it would overthrow capitalism. So I appreciate not having to go that far. We've got Brother Reynolds, so I don't have to go that far. And thank you for calling in. I hope in the future you will call in and give us your spin on what the hell happened in Bessemer. We really would appreciate that. Without further ado, Sister Dolores, your mic is open.
Thank you. I read an article in last week's New York Times, and it's about the state of Minnesota. It says the state's reputation belies some of the country's largest racial disparities. Now, we know Minnesota's where George Floyd and recently Dante Wright were racially profiled and murdered by the police. This article is written by a professor of public affairs at the University of Minnesota, and he has written extensively about public policy and race in the state. It starts off saying that Minnesota is one of the best places to live in America. It has good schools, excellent housing, and low unemployment. It regularly appears near the top of indexes for livability. But all of that matters much less if you're black. Across a whole host of measures, unemployment rates, wages, incarceration rates, test scores, home ownership rates, the gaps between white Minnesotans and black Minnesotans are among the widest in the country. Take automobile ownership, for example. Nationally, 9% of households have no vehicle. The rate is 7% in Minnesota. Among African-American households nationally, 19% have no vehicle. Among African-American households in Minnesota, the rate is an astonishingly high 24%. So while Minnesota is a great place to live for white people, for black people, it's just like everywhere else, and sometimes worse. This is what I've termed, and this is what the author is saying. He's saying, this is what I've termed the Minnesota paradox. Huge racial disparities masked by aggregate outcomes. And it's an issue that I've been studying since moving to Minnesota in the 1990s. Racial disparities are manifestations of racism. Many policymakers and most commonly members in Minnesota see racism as individual bigotry and racial animosity. The good public servants who administer the child welfare programs and disproportionately place black and Native American children into foster care, for example, are doing them a favor by providing them with publicly financed child protective services. Routinely, they stop suspicious drivers with expired tags, law enforcement agents do, or an air freshener dangling from the rearview mirror. They're merely trying to reduce crime and catch criminals, they say. For many Americans, this does not amount to racism because the individual decisions are not motivated by racial animus. But it says, he continues, he says, residences range from multi-million-dollar mansions to small bungalows and townhouses. In this sense, Minnesota is one of the most progressive states in the United States, but the structure of many of Minnesota's policies and institutions, like police policies, housing policies, even regulations about driver's licenses and renewal of tags, has a disproportionately adverse impact on non-whites. These effects are not overcome by Minnesota's progressivism. Minnesota has long been a magnet for African-American residents seeking a better life. When it was illegal in most states in the country to marry a white woman, Minnesota beckoned. When job opportunities for black chemists and engineers from Howard University and Hampton Institute were limited, Minnesota corporations like 3M and Honeywell were unabashed recruiters of African-American talent. Unfortunately, the small number of black people who lived in Minnesota in the early 20th century and through the post-war era faced brutal redlining policies and practices from real estate brokers and lenders and racial covenants limiting where they could purchase homes. Redlining has left a lasting impact on racial disparities in wealth. Policing policies substituted overt, explicit racial profiling found in other cities with scientifically managed administration of racially disparate arrests. In the 1990s, Minnesota's child welfare and public housing policies simultaneously served as magnets for the dispossessed of other Midwestern cities like Detroit, Chicago, and Gary, Indiana, while reinforcing white welfare and housing authorities' negative views toward the black migrants, the new black migrants. The result was rules governing benefits. Reduction in benefits when out of compliance with work rules, child support rules, even when fathers were incarcerated and thus unable to pay child support, that disproportionately affected black people. The public employees who enforce these policies do not view themselves as racist. After all, this is Minnesota, the liberal and progressive state that opens its doors to the poor and downtrodden. Instead, they were creating and perpetuating racial discrimination that baked disparities into the structure of life in Minnesota. But needless to say, their effects linger on. If Minnesota's students want to end the paradox, they must acknowledge and change policies, past and present, that have led to such wide racial disparities and that belie its self-image as a progressive and egalitarian state. I'm going to end there. There's a little more, but I'm sure everybody gets the drift here. And it's very informative. So that's it.
Thank you so much for that. And understand, folks, that's the best of America. And everything from there is downhill. This is what we're dealing with. Sister Betty.
I want to thank Sister Dolores for that. I also want to remind you of what the former speaker said in terms of an analysis of American capitalism and the relationship between the workers and the ruling class. If you don't have that analysis, Minnesota won't make any sense to you. It's not just racism, it's fascism, and it's capitalism. Without further ado, Sister Gwen, so good to have you back, and Brother Joel, hang in there. Sister Gwen, your mic is open. And thank you, Dolores. Very detailed report. You need to parallel the report that Brother Dennis gave us to what Sister Dolores just told us. You got to be able to hold these two discussions in your head, people, to analyze what's going on here and know how to fight back. Go ahead, Sister Gwen.
Yeah. Hi, Betty. Hi, Ralph and everybody. There's a lot of isms going on tonight. And I think one of the things that has been on my mind, I heard a woman speak on Gary Noll the other day, and it really resonated with me because there are so many things that are changing and have been changing in our society, and they bother me, and it's sort of like a gut instinct that they bother me. And when I was listening to this woman speak, she was from Austria. She was alive when Hitler came in, and she talked about Austria. Actually, you know, many people think that Germany stormed Austria and took over, but that wasn't the case. They voted by 98% to allow Hitler to come in and take over Austria. They thought that Germany was in much better shape than they were, and they thought that they should have some of that too. And the things that she started to talk about were very interesting. And also what's interesting is this vaccine. So one of the things she talked about was immediately Hitler wanted to get all of the children into daycare like we have today, because they wanted the government to be able to infiltrate the children as early as possible to influence their thinking. So the best thing to do was to make sure that they got them really early. She went on to say that she went back to visit her old high school, which her mother had taken her out of, and found out that there was lots and lots of her girlfriends that were pregnant. And the reason why they were pregnant is because Hitler wanted to have an Aryan race. So everyone was encouraged to get pregnant, become pregnant. And then they, as I listened to her speak, I just kept thinking about the mores today and how they've changed and how people that are very far to the right, it doesn't seem to bother them at all that so many girls are getting pregnant without getting married and really don't have anything to lean on. They don't have a partner, and they don't care as long as they're having these babies. And I find that this is going along with the white Christian coalition. This is something that's really they're not coming right out and saying do this, but they really seem to want these girls to have babies, white babies. So they're not discouraging white girls anymore from getting pregnant out of wedlock or not getting married. It just is sort of like, oops, it happened, but it happened everywhere. And as far as the daycare centers, well, you know, my good friend Joel, when I discussed my concern about it, because when I saw lots of white women that could work, didn't have to work, but were putting their babies into daycare very, very early on, like 6 months or maybe 3 months, and then they were just going to let them be raised by people they didn't know, it concerned me because I do know that there's a bond between a mother and a child, and I think it is important, if you can afford it, that you be able to spend the developing years with your child, because I would think you'd have an investment in your child. So I just was really thinking that we don't know really that much of our history, lots of people. We certainly don't know about, many people don't know about the development that Hitler put together to get his brand across. And one thing I was listening to this morning on Democracy Now, this was also on later on an afternoon show, was a group of lawyers speaking from Israel about the vaccine. And they are doing a lawsuit because they are having a lot of people that are getting sick and dying. And the lawsuit is about the fact that this vaccine, it is experimental. And there have been more than enough deaths and more than enough injuries to close it down, to shut it down. And yet it doesn't get shut down in the name of the so-called pandemic. I'm not saying the pandemic doesn't exist or this disease does not exist, but I'm highly suspicious of its origins, and I don't think it's an organic disease. And I'm very nervous about putting something into my body which is going to reprogram my DNA. And as Joel has explained and I have explained that, you know, once you take the shot, it's reprogramming your DNA to allow this disease to develop in your body. But as I said last week, there's no turnoff. You can't turn that faucet off. So in the future, you may develop other autoimmune diseases, and that's what's really scaring me about putting that into my body, because my parents are in their 90s, so longevity is in our family, and I don't want to live the rest of my life having multiple sclerosis or having other kinds of autoimmune diseases. But I see that the clampdown, the lockdown is really happening now. I would be perfectly willing to take a test to tell people whether or not I have the disease. I think that's fair to ask. But I don't think it's fair to say to people, you cannot go to work unless you get this vaccine. You cannot travel anywhere unless you get this vaccine, especially given the vaccine does not cure you. It does not prevent you from getting it, and it does not prevent you from giving it. So what is really going on here? I just also want to say that when we're listening to people talk, I think that there is something going on the agenda worldwide with multiple facets at the same time. I was listening to a speaker on the radio today who is really usually makes mockery of conspiracy theories. But today she talked about the killing of this man who was shot in the back of the head. He was shot 5 times, and his hands were on the steering wheel. And she mentioned that she thought that these shootings just keep on happening as a way to provoke the black population, that there just seems to be an agenda to keep going to see what the ultimate response is going to be. And that could be. But I also see that there's all these other things going on at the same time. And it seems like there's an agenda worldwide of I don't know, creating multiple disasters at the same time. And it's I think that it's something we should be aware of, and we should try to stop doing the – look, try to find as many people that are on the same page as possible and work together. there are inequities. There is violence. There are terrible things that are happening. But, you know, there is a saying about comparing yourself. So, you know, if you compare, you will despair. And I would offer this up to people that I think that the planet is in a dire circumstance. And we have powers that be. We have a few people at the top that are holding the strings. And I do not trust them. And it really scares me. I mean, this guy Musk is talking about now artificial intelligence that he wants to marry into people's brain through a chip. That's out there. That's out there. That's his idea. He's already presenting it to the public. I mean, these are scary people. Bill Gates is buying all of the farmland in order to use genetic engineering to create more vegetation upon the land. I would have no problem with the vegetation, but this genetically engineered stuff, I mean, it's just one bad idea after another. And the people that are the players, for example, Bill Gates, who's not even a scientist, and yet he's the one who's developing all these vaccines. He's a major player. And the world of people, the population, is getting smaller while the people at the top are getting smaller. And we have less people that are hovering over us and telling us what to do and controlling our lives. And ultimately, what is behind this? What is it that they really want? Is it just to thin out the population of the world? I mean, what is it they really ultimately want? It's the biggest question, and it's not answered for me. And the last thing I want to say is I'm shocked at Tom's report. It's very upsetting to hear that these people have signed on to this. Joel has brought this out, I think, last week about what's been going on with America using our military to provoke other nations like China and Russia, especially China. I think we've had our warships in front of, and we're shocked at the response. I don't know. So I guess these are just some of my passing thoughts this week, and I'll turn it over to Ralph and Betty. And thank you for listening.
Well, thank you so much, Gwen. We can always count on a fuller, a different perspective. And this is what this is about, getting the correct perspective and then doing something about it. The issue of abortion was never understood from a perspective of white and black folk. Thanks, Gwen. Keep it coming. Sister Betty.
Again, I want to remind you of one thing Sister Gwen said that makes sense. We got problems here, and we're all coming at it. We're all identifying the same problem, and we need to work together on an effective solution. This is one of the biggest imperialistic powers in the history of the world. We've got to organize. We've got to do better. And I'm so glad that people like Comrade Reynolds and Tom and Joel, who is up next. But Joel, before we open your mic, Ann Lamb has an emergency announcement to make concerning Mamiya. So, Joel, I hope you'll forgive me, and Sister Belinda, you'll forgive me. We want to hear the announcement. Anne, go ahead. Your mic is open.
Okay, it'll be brief. It's just a little breaking news that was just posted very shortly ago on the Jamal Journal. It says, Mumia has been moved today to the prison infirmary. Please check back for more information. So we definitely will be checking back because... He was transferred from the hospital today to the so-called infirmary, and that means he's back in the hands of the enemy completely in dock. And it's a very, very frightening place for him to be. So any new updates I get, I will be putting out there immediately. We need to make more phone calls or whatever it is we need to do to make sure that he's okay. So I just wanted to let people know that just happened shortly ago.
Thank you so much for that, Anne. Very important that we're aware and ready to take action.
All right. Joel, your mic is open. Thank you, Anne. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Betty.
Joel, your mic is open. We have two speakers after you, Joel.
Joel, your mic is open.
Yes. Hello?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
We're waiting, Joel.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Bring the mic close.
Okay. So it's working now.
It's very important.
Okay. It's working now. Okay. So looks as if after the trial of Derek Chauvin, the police have doubled down seems, at least from the reports, an extraordinary number of new brazen racist murders by the by police forces in many states. I don't know how many. I think the latest count that I heard was over 70, and that's just in this 1 week. So the struggle, a lot of people, we seem to think that we reach, a certain event takes place, like that trial, and then reality is turned a certain corner. But in reality, it seems like the more more time passes, the more acute all of the different confrontations in society are becoming, to the point where it looks like a civil war atmosphere is developing in the country right now. And have to be very very energetic now in terms of pulling together what forces we have, and because the developments are coming very quickly, and we're under a lot of pressure in terms of the in terms of the time that we have left to be able to answer the escalating violence and survive. So so we have a great deal of organizing to do, and it's not a time to feel relieved at all. It's a time to really it appears a bit that the opposite side forces are doubling down, and we have to be preparing for a situation that's developing very quickly now. I want to say also that an interesting event happened on the in the last few weeks. I spoke about the naval buildups off the coasts of Russia and China. And I haven't heard much news about either one, but there were two events that seemed to be matched. And that was that the Americans wanted to sail some warships into the Black Sea. The Black Sea is right near the southern coast of Russia and Ukraine and Crimea, and there was a certain strait that the ships would have to pass through, and the Russian Navy concentrated on the other end of that strait, and Putin said that this would not be permitted to sail a ship into that area, and they turned back. And then a few days later, there was a pullback of Russian troops from the Ukrainian border. So it seems that by standing up strongly and threatening consequences, that some of the momentum has subsided, at least in that area. But I think that the naval presence is still very heavy in off the Russian coast, in the Baltic Sea, and off the Chinese coast in the South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait. Again, on that front, we have the almost pre-announced by the way in which, the angle from which the most of the high-level criticism of Trump was directed by the imperialists and their media, that they were disappointed in him in that he was provocative enough, not hostile enough. The increase of the sanctions and everything wasn't enough, and they wanted a more confrontational presence and build up towards war against Russia and China, and that was the main criticism of him, and so that the escalation of international tensions with the other superpowers it was almost pre-announced by that direction of that criticism of Trump, who was more concentrating on pouring military funds and all kinds of gestures, opening up war in the Middle East. So it wasn't that you had one peacenik and another administration of warmongers. It's the area of concentration of the warmongering was different between the two, and apparently related in that that Trump had not only corrupt reasons motivating some of the decrease in tensions with Russia, but also they wanted Russia to not to back up its allies in the Middle East, who seem to be coming under attack, especially in Syria, which has been bombed by the Israelis almost every day, and Iran, and that worked to a certain extent. You had while this was going on, you had the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu invited to march as the only foreign dignitary in the Russian celebration of its World War II victory over Nazi Germany. And he was marched in the front line with the highest Russian officials in Moscow while the bombing of Syria was going on an almost daily basis and still continues to this day. So these two things are connected, and we have to pay a lot of attention on foreign policy as well as on domestic policy. The two things are linked, and that is stop the war against the rest of the world, stop the idea of trying to colonize the rest of the world, and stop the war against Black America and other oppressed people right within the United States itself.
Thank you so much for that, Joel. It's a wonderful perspective. We must be aware of what's happening with our government as related to the rest of the world. Mr. Betty.
Not only that, I hope you understand that phrase, stop the wars at home as well as abroad. Stop the wars abroad and at home. It's the same imperial power. It's American capitalism. And as Sister Gwen said, we have got to come up with an analysis that looks at all the different areas where we are under attack in this society. Without further ado, when you organize at home to fight back against this giant, you have the same tools to fight on an international level. So without further ado, we want to introduce Sister Belinda Parker Brown from New Orleans, Louisiana, who is fighting a war against this imperial power and colonialism in the worst death camp, Angola Prison. Sister Belinda, your mic is open, and thank you for waiting. And 9212,
good evening,
to you. We'll give you a chance.
Good evening. Thank you so much, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, for all the great work that you're doing in this fight. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight. Just briefly, I just want the world to know what's happening here in the state of Louisiana. We have, you're right, Sister Betty, the death camp Angola, and we're calling for Angola to be shut down. We do not need a prison that is a mockery, that put people in slavery and work them for 4 cents a day to make people billionaires. Also, we're fighting this constant fight right now in the headlines of what Louisiana United International is doing right now is that we're saying that the way our communities are being policed is a gateway to the corrupt criminal justice system that weaponized people to put them in prison. And that is why we're calling for that. We're saying that predatory policing is unconstitutional, it's criminal what they're doing here, and we want the world to know. I also like to make a very important announcement that, you know, there is some great things that's happening. We're going to start a live broadcast. It's called Internet Television Broadcast, and we're titling it Fighting for the Informed Compliance, and that is to expose the way our communities are being policed, and we're calling it predatory policing. And I want Sister Betty, you and Brother Ralph, at any time you feel like you are available to be a part of this live broadcast on TV, Internet. I'm inviting you and your guests here on tonight to join us. I will send you the link and all the information of the time of the broadcast and the days that we're going to be having it. Also, we're getting ready to organize and mobilize the people here in the state of Louisiana to have a major town hall meeting on reparation and liberation for all the people that are being held right now as we speak, wrongfully convicted inside of these godforsaken hellhole prisons and jails across the state of Louisiana. We're calling for a mass demonstration that the whole world can come to. So within the months and days to come, we hope to have more information about this town hall meeting that we're saying reparation and liberation for all of our political prisoners that are being held in these hellhole jails in the state of Louisiana. So thank you for giving me that opportunity, and I have really enjoyed this show tonight with all of your guests and everyone that have spoken. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for the invite to the Internet Television Show. We will certainly be there because there is much to be said, much to be exposed, and much, much more to be done.
And we will share the link, Sister Belinda, because we have got to expose Angola Death Camp. It is outrageous in a country that claims to be for freedom and democracy. These people are working for, what did you say, 4 cents an hour, and there are 25 major corporations. Where are the unions to fight, help us fight these death camps?
Yes, Sister Betty, if you allow me, I just want to say I just met with a mother today, and this is how serious it is here. This mother have not heard from her son for over 2 weeks. She was told that he had gotten to a fight and supposedly had gotten a hold to some type of mojo or drug or something inside of the prison that have caused him to be out of his mind. And he is not, she is not even allowed to speak to him on the phone. She don't even know if he's dead or alive. So, you know, these are the type of things that are happening, and we have to expose. It's a tyranny, and it's a suffering, and it's torture on families for their loved ones that are suffering inside of these hell holes. So these are the type of things that I want the world to know. We have to expose it.
Thank you so much. And that information, that exposure, is the last defense available for oppressed people. We must use it in spite of the government's attack on anyone who speaks truth. Continue to struggle.
I just want to say that's why we support Snowden and Assange. 9212, you want to make any last announcements? You came on late in the call, but if you want to say something, 9212.
No, thank you. Sorry. I'll get you guys next time. But hey, keep up the great work you guys are doing. Great work. And I hope that Angola prison thing is getting taken care of. I think we need to get in touch with the governor of the state of Louisiana and put pressure on. But next time, I would most definitely want to speak.
Thank you so much. Look forward to hearing from you next week. Look forward to hearing from all of the people who took their time to be educated and to educate others on what they know. Good night. Great love and respect for those who have the courage to stand up and speak out. Sister Betty.
Defend Assange. Defend Snowden. And I hope Brother Reynolds, you'll return. Give us some updates. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Dolores. And Gwen. We really, really thank all of you. And, of course, Sister Ann. And Brother Dennis, we look forward to hearing from you as well. Thank you, everybody, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The whole world here. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the fears that keep us